We're pleased to be joined by Chris Sheridan from SheridanHoops.com. Chris has done a great job with this website. Remember when it first started? And again, if you're listening to us online, minimize us. Go to SheridanHoops.com to read along as we talk to Chris Sheridan. He joins us here on Above the Rim on NBA Radio. Chris, it's Jonathan Hood and Brian Scalabrine. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, good morning, Jonathan. I don't know what we're going to talk about at this dead stage of the summer other than we could tell Brian Scalabrine stories.
No. We're talking Team Canada. Team Canada and Kelly Olynyk bangs his knee. What happened?
Your thoughts, sir.
Kelly Olynyk banged his knee, but it was no Dante Exum injury. And, you know, it gets into the subject of players getting hurt playing for their national teams. You know, Dante Exum goes down with a torn MCL. Right. He's done for the year for a Utah Jazz team that was looking to make a little noise and maybe crash the top eight in the Western Conference, where Kelly Olynyk, he bangs his knee, and yeah, it's news, but he returned to the bench, and from all indications from Ryan Wolstadt with the Toronto Sun, who's down there covering the Tito Marchand Cup in Puerto Rico, it doesn't look too serious. But this is why teams don't like having their players play for their national teams over the summer. But it is what it is. And, you know, Andrew Wiggins is playing for Canada. Andrew Nicholson is playing for Canada. Corey Joseph, although he didn't play last night, is playing for Canada. And Team Canada, Canada Basketball, is trying to put together a team that compete with the United States by the time the 2020 Olympics rolls around. You know, first things first, they got to try to qualify for the Rio Olympics, and they'll be doing that in Mexico City starting next week at the FIBA Americas tournament. But by the time 2020 rolls around, fellas, Canada's going to have a team 1 through 12 full of NBA players, and these guys are going to be in their prime.
Well, do you think it's smart, though, to, especially from the United States standpoint, to have the NBA players out there? Which way do you side? Do you go to the NBA guys, or do you think you should be the college guys?
Hey, man, this is international competition. This is sports. We put our best against your best. Let's see who wins. And that's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. If somebody gets hurt, that's unfortunate. But, you know, like Larry Bird said when Paul George broke his leg last year in a meaningless scrimmage, you know what? That could happen on any court, anywhere. And basketball players play basketball during the summer. Whether they do it for their national team or whether they do it at Rucker or whether they do it, you know, at the Drew League out in California, basketball players are playing basketball in the summer, and they can get hurt. It's a contact sport, and injuries happen. So yeah, I'm all in favor of let everybody play, put your best teams out there. And, you know, quite frankly, for the Olympics, it shouldn't just be a 12-team field. That should probably be about a 16-team field so you could allow in more teams. Because when you look at the fields for Rio next year, the United States is in because Team USA won the world championship last summer, and that's an automatic berth. Brazil is in because it's a host nation. And then there's two spots up for grabs in the FIBA America tournament in Mexico City. That means a third of the field is going to be from the FIBA America's grouping. But there's a lot of good teams in Europe. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good teams in Europe, and there's only two spots open. And, you know, France is out there with pretty much their A team. Everybody is out except for Joakim Noah. Spain is in there. They've got Pau playing, but they don't have Marc Gasol playing, and they're missing a few other key players, including Rubio, of course, and Juan Carlos Navarro. But Dirk Nowitzki is playing for Germany. You know, Lithuania has always got a great team. There's going to be a lot of good teams over there that don't qualify for the Olympics and are going to have to try again next June when they have the second chance qualifying tournaments. And what FIBA has done is they've changed the format. They're now going to have three tournaments, six teams each, next June and early July. And the winner of each of those tournaments gets a berth in the Olympics. But only five of those teams are coming from Europe. So in Eurobasket this summer, you got to finish first or second to go to Rio, and you got to finish either third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh in order to get a chance in the second chance tournament. And, you know, in the meantime, there's going to be a team that comes out of Africa that has absolutely no chance of competing. There's going to be a team that comes out of the FIBA Asia tournament that has absolutely no chance of competing. So from your 12-team field, you're down to 10. And four of those are from FIBA Americas. It's not a good representation of what the world has to offer in basketball. And, you know, the FIBA's been calling for years to expand the tournament to 16 teams. But the International Olympic Committee, they keep saying, look, the Olympics is already too big. We don't want to make it even bigger, and that's why they've held on at 12.
Shifting over to the NBA, we're talking win totals. You know, everything we had last year, status quo, Golden State Warriors, Cleveland, San Antonio. Do you find any of these teams are going to make a huge jump? You know, Golden State won 67 games. You see them dropping off. San Antonio won 55 games. You see them spiking up. Is there any big jumps you see from last year to this year?
Well, not among those two. You know, Golden State stood pat, other than the David Lee trade. And then they made a really nice move, flipping Gerald Wallace for Jason Thompson, who Jason Thompson can really help them. Everybody considers him a power forward, but he played center at Ryder. I was kind of appalled at the Sixers for giving him away and taking back Gerald Wallace. I thought Jason Thompson could have helped the Sixers get probably 10 more wins this year, backing up Nerlens Noel. So, Golden State was the class of the West, and in that strong of a conference to win 67 games with the point differential they did, they're not going anywhere. San Antonio, they lost both their centers, Aaron Baines and Tiago Splitter, in order to clear the cap room to get LaMarcus Aldridge. And you know, I don't think they told him at the time, but LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be playing center for that.
They pulled the wool under it. Like, I don't want to play center. Don't worry, you won't. And then they got rid of their centers. You're exactly right. I love how that works out, right?
He's going to be banging with the Dwight Howards and the DeAndre Jordans of the world. And it's really going to test LaMarcus's game because, you know, LaMarcus – has always had a big, you know, he had Robin Lopez playing next to him in Portland and Chris Kamen. And right now the Spurs only have Boban Marjanovic, the rookie from Serbia, as their center. And I don't think Pop wants to go to war with just one center who's a rookie. So let's wait and see what the Spurs pull off in terms of finding another big guy. But the Spurs did lose some key players. You know, Corey Joseph, they lost. They didn't use him that much because they had Patty Mills, but he's still a quality player. He'll be a nice addition up in Toronto. And then Marco Bellinelli went and signed with the Sacramento Kings, who I thought had a terrific offseason. I'm interested to see what the odds makers put as the over-under for their win total. Because when you had Rajon Rondo and you hang on to DeMarcus Cousins, the guy you were going to trade, and you add Bellinelli, and there's somebody else I'm leaving out because it's the damn middle of August, but Sacramento Kings may be a bit of a sleeper team this year. And when I was out in Vegas for Team USA camp last week, they were sitting at 300-1 to win the title. Now, I don't think they're going to win the title, but those are a hell of a lot longer odds than the Lakers, for instance, who are sitting at 80-1. And I think people might be sleeping on Sacramento Kings a little bit.
Chris Sheridan from SheridanHoops.com with Brian Scalabrini and Jonathan Hood on Above the Rim on NBA Radio. When it comes to Kobe Bryant, do you believe that they're going to have to grab him and drag him off the court, or will he know when it's time to go? Because he's going to be with this Lakers team that more than likely won't make the playoffs. So how much time left for Kobe Bryant?
You know, that's going to be determined by how he looks. If he's still scoring at a high rate, at a 25-point-per-game rate, And he thinks that team is headed in the right direction. You know, remember they got Julius Randle back now, and they got D'Angelo Russell in the draft, and they have the makings of a team that's going to rebuild itself, say a lot quicker than the New York Knicks are going to rebuild themselves. Can they build themselves into a playoff contender in 1 year? No, I don't think so. But can they do it in 2 years, especially with all the cap room they're going to have next summer, when they can go out and maybe land a guy like Kevin Durant, or maybe, you know, get a guy like Hassan Whiteside. They can get another star to play in Los Angeles next year. So I think, you know, we'll find out about Kobe by what we see over the course of an 82-game season. Certainly, the guy hasn't played for 2 years, more or less, right? You know, between the rotator cuff and the knee injury. So it's not like he's put a lot of miles on his wheels for over the last 2 years, and he's 37. You know, he's not 40; he's 37, yeah. And he still has a tremendous work ethic. Over the weekend, he tweeted out that he's finally back in the gym shooting, and you know he's going to wear out the Nets between now and the start of the season. So I think a real wait and see attitude with Kobe. He's not so old that he needs to retire, but guards do age quicker than players at other positions. So look, if he's at 25 points a game and he's shooting 46%, you know, that's a high quality basketball player who's probably not ready to shut it down. So if he's up at numbers like that, I think it's a cinch that he comes back for another year. On the other hand, if he's at 19 points a game and he's shooting 39%, I think that's it. And I think he'll go out by becoming a member of Team USA and going down to Rio for the Olympics and closing his career with a gold medal.
That's interesting that you say that, because I can promise you right now he's not going to be at 25 and shooting 46%. He might be shooting 37% and get those 25 points a game. I want to know this. I'm the only one that thinks this. Of everyone I talk to, can Kobe take the Tim Duncan role? Can Kobe say, hey, go out there and sign two free agents, give me whatever's left? So he's playing for $7-8 million. And he's the fourth, fifth option on this Laker team. He's the mentor. He's the leader. He's the exact opposite of what everyone has ever said about him, that he's selfish. He has a huge ego. He's not going to be able to check that at the door. I want to hear someone else say it, because I believe that he could like do the Paul Pierce thing. But you enlighten me. You enlighten me on this one. You think Kobe could take that fourth option, fifth option? And what I mean by that is basically not a guy that's initiating offense when he's coming off a pick and roll and he just kind of spot up in the corner, but still effective, leadership effective, and more importantly, take the big salary cut so he could get two major free agents next summer.
That's a great question, Brian. It's a great question. And could he? I think it comes down to, could he subjugate his ego and play that kind of a role? And you know, it's not even so much the salary, because I could see him playing for the vet minimum if he wanted to go into that role, just to allow him the cap space to get two guys. But who are those two guys going to be? You know,
so let's just say, Durant and Al Horford. Can you see him doing this, or you can't?
If they have the makings of a championship team, then, you know, it like I said, it really comes down to a question of, can he subjugate his ego to the point where he might be coming off the bench as a sixth man, and he might only be an 18-minute player per night, and he hasn't been that ever in his life, you know, for a 20-year NBA career, you know, when he was in high school at Lower Merion. He's never done that before. And to take that much of a step back when you're that big of a personality and that big of a star, and, you know, as I said, when you have as big of an ego as he has, you know, the guy's a diva. Let's just call it what it is, a diva. Could he go from, you know, from being the lead singer to being, you know, the backup singer? I got a tough time seeing that. But that being said, if the Lakers can get themselves in position to put a championship-caliber team on the floor, and like you said, you get Durant and Horford, you're pretty damn close, then yeah. Yeah, gotcha. I think it's within him to do it. But again, a lot of it depends on what kind of a season he has this year. And Brian, if he's shooting 37% this year, this is it. He's not a 37% shooter over the course of his career, and you know, that's a clear sign of diminishing skills. And he doesn't want to be a guy who people said, you know what, he stuck around a year or two too long, because that's not the way that Kobe Bryant wants his fans to remember him. So let's say he shoots 41 this year and he averages 19, and they go and get Durant and Horford. Then he's got a heck of a decision on his hands, because as an off-the-bench player, as an 18, 20-minute-a-night player, he could be a difference maker on a championship team.
No question about it. No question.
So, yeah, it's one of the things that makes this Lakers season that's upcoming so very interesting.
Chris, last thing we have for you, we appreciate your time. With Golden State, what is the likelihood that they could repeat as champions?
Well, they're in a tough conference, and you know, Oklahoma City, now that they're going to have Kevin Durant back, and you know, I talked to Kevin at Team USA camp, and he was ready to start doing 5-on-5s by the end of this month. Russell Westbrook's back. Enes Kanter was probably the best pickup of the trade deadline. And they've never had a center who could score the way that Enos Kanter can, not to mention rebound the way he can. You know, those three guys and Ibaka, Oklahoma City is going to be a bear. I don't know that, that they should be counted out. You know, granted, Golden State beat up everybody last year, but they didn't have to go through the Clippers and they didn't have to go through the Spurs in the playoffs. Their road to the finals was a little bit easier than maybe it would have been, especially in a conference as strong as the West is. So I don't think Lightning will strike twice and they'll have an easy road again like they did last year. But again, the 67 wins speak for themselves. 67 wins in a powerhouse conference, that's a great, great team. It's tough to repeat. You know, it's real tough to repeat because you're not as hungry as you were a year before. And lucky for them, they finally got hungry in game four of the finals, because before that it looked like the Cavaliers wanted it a lot more. But there are no givens in the Western Conference by any means. And I think if Oklahoma City is able to stay healthy, I think that's their number one competition for the conference title.
And wow, you said, Chris, just no Spurs in there at all. That's not even in the conversation?
The Spurs are always in the conversation, but all I said was their number one competitor is going to be Oklahoma City. But,
I actually agree with you.
The San Antonio Spurs are going to be right where they always are. They're going to be between 55 and 60 wins. And again, let's see what they can do to man the middle, because Duncan and Aldridge are two nice guys to have, but they really do duplicate each other. And Duncan can have less of a workload, but LaMarcus Aldridge is the same player as Tim Duncan is. He doesn't shoot as many bank shots, but he still gets a lot of his points from outside of 8-10 feet, as Timmy does. So it'll be interesting to see how they use the two of them together.
And you said we had nothing to talk about in August. Chris, as always, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Check in on Olynyk. Make sure he's okay.
Check in.
Sorry we didn't get to tell our Scalabrine stories, because there's a lot of them, man.
Keep them to yourself. Come on, Chris. No one wants to read about that.
We'll do that next time. Come on, man. Who DJ Kidd dressed up as when he was a kid?
You're right. There are legendary. These stories, they get just exacerbated over time.
Yeah, that's a true one. All right, fellas. Enjoy
Thanks,
the rest
Chris.
Of the
All right, take it easy.
Thank you, Chris Sheridan from SheridanHoops.com with us on Above the Rim on NBA Radio.